This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Revington with Austin Wintry. And, you know, it's always such a fun time to catch up with you. But we've got a really, really cool thing to talk about this time, your amazing Kickstarter project. So thanks so much for taking some time to talk about it.
Thank you. It's obviously I feel incredibly grateful to be able to work in games and in film and all these other places. But this is kind of a whole other undertaking because it's the first time in a while that I've done something that is completely of my own making, you know, self-propelled. But it feels like a one-off, not even first time in a while kind of thing, because it's such a bigger scope than I typically do. You know, I love kind of my artsy projects, or like the things that Anhila and I have done and things like that. But this kind of explodes it to a radically new level. So appreciate you giving me the chance to yak about it here.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, full disclosure, I'm backer number 46 because I think this is just an incredible experience, really kind of a once in a lifetime thing. Although the reason that you're doing the Kickstarter for this project, A Light in the Void, is so that it's not just a one-off thing. I mean, what you're doing to raise the money to support is having this thing, this incredible experience, like live on in a lot of different ways, which I think is really incredible.
That's the hope. Well, and you, how incredibly wonderful that you would be a backer in the 40s. We are currently sitting at about 800 and change backers, which makes you an early adopter, which makes you very special and close to our heart. So thank you for that.
Well, let's describe it a little bit because we've sort of like tap danced around this, but it's sort of this wonderful collaboration between you and Tony Lund, a longtime friend who's an Emmy-nominated director and creator of science films, and some incredible science speakers as well. And it's all coming together in October in Colorado with the Colorado Symphony on October 5th. And clearly, it doesn't come out of nowhere. So how long have you been kicking this idea around, and how long have you been working on this amazing-sounding project?
The idea goes back by at least 4 or 5 years, but it was in a very embryonic state back then. I suppose I should explain what it is first, because it's actually proven to be quite challenging to give the kind of, you know, elevator pitch of the show. I heard someone the other day said, you know, I've mastered the elevator pitch of like the Empire State Building, you know, length elevator ride. And so the shortest way I've kind of described it, which is not perfect, but I've been calling it kind of in a slightly tongue-in-cheek way, a TED Theater Symphony.
Wow.
Which is my way of kind of bringing together the different elements that comprise it. One of our backers actually on one of the live streams that we did said, oh, so it's basically Cosmos meets Fantasia. And Tony and I both said, you know, that's actually kind of perfect. I suppose no little one sentence description is truly perfect, but it captures the bare essence of it. And so what it is, first off, it's all original music, and it's driven by music. So it is fundamentally a symphonic show, though it is very theatrical. But I like to make sure that distinction's clear, because once you go too far down describing the theater aspects of it, once you go too far down that kind of rabbit hole, you picture like a Broadway stage, and obviously in a context like that, your orchestra, if there even is one, or your ensemble of some kind, is down in a pit, or maybe even non-existent and purely coming through speakers as prelays. And the whole idea is that this is a large-scale visual kind of spectacle meant for a symphony orchestra concert hall. And so I would liken it to the kind of shows, for example, that my agent has been producing at the Hollywood Bowl the last several years, like The Little Mermaid Live, or La La Land Live, Nightmare Before Christmas Live, where they are symphony shows, but they are much more than that. And there's a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of visual design and crazy lighting design and staged theatrics with people coming and going from the stage. And even potentially, you know, audience interactivity and all kinds of things like that. You know, they did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory live a couple months ago where they had the shell of the Hollywood Bowl with animations projecting onto it that were kind of like extensions of what was on the movie screen. So it was kind of like this, the film was bleeding out onto the hall itself. That kind of thing where it's just really fundamentally not purely sit and watch an orchestra. So we have all of that going for us, but the actual content itself is built around a series of questions that we are turning to some of the top scientists in the world to explore. And I like to use that word in particular because we're not trying to answer these questions as if we can throw down some of these massively existential issues and say, here's the answer. But instead, it's like, here is someone who spent their whole life exploring this question, and they're going to kind of explore it in a very personal way with us on stage, and it's going to be set to music, which is another distinction I find important to make. Sometimes when I describe it, people picture, you know, a scientist speaking, and then there's music with maybe visual projection, and then the music stops, and then we get another, you know, lecture, essentially, and then the music starts again. And I said, no, this is more like an oratorio, where all of the show is set to music. The whole thing is musical, not to be confused with being a musical, but it is like in the movie at the end when the hero is giving the dramatic speech, the monologue to rally the troops, and the music is kind of swelling and adding this gravitas to what they are saying. Our whole show is built with that kind of aesthetic.
That sounds incredible.
Well, I hope. we'll find out. But that's the kind of the promise. So these existential questions that we're asking are, where did we come from? Who are we? And where are we going? And so, you know, three massively kind of endless questions, eternal questions. And for the question of where did we come from, we have our first scientist who's a specialist in high energy physics and kind of particle physics and all things quantum, named Maria Spirapoulou, who is a lead experiment designer of the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland and also part of the physics department here in LA at Caltech. And the question of who are we turns to Alice Roberts, anthropologist out of the UK, who's a regular to BBC viewers for all of her endless TV specials and things like that about, you know, ancient human civilizations, human evolution and origins, and that kind of, you know, paleo anthropological type subjects. And then for Where Are We Going is an astronomer and planetary scientist who was the lead of the imaging team on the Cassini probe that was kind of at the forefront of last year's by far biggest space news when the Cassini probe did its suicide, you know, dive down into the atmosphere of Saturn after a 20-year mission traveling to and then orbiting and documenting Saturn. And that's kind of her project. In fact, Neil deGrasse Tyson calls her Madam Saturn because, you know, she's sort of the queen of that operation. And so she'll be addressing this question of, you know, where are we going? And then in between all of these will be a bunch of interstitial bits of, you know, kind of documentary packages featuring other scientists, animations, and on stage theatrics and all kinds of other things to really make a sort of all-encompassing, engrossing, and hopefully really stimulating experience. And the thing is, all of it is grounded, of course, in science, and not sensationalist, like Twitter clickbait science, but real science. And the reason we call it a TED Theater Symphony, even though we're not actually affiliated with TED, but just because that model makes sense to people. You'd think a 20-minute-ish presentation by a brilliant person that's polished and rehearsed and of the kind of dimensions in terms of its length that lets them get into some meaty substance on whatever they want to talk about. But it's not an hour-long technical talk. Like we were just at GDC, right? And in an hour, you can cover quite a lot of ground and get into some fairly heady material. And we don't want to go too far so that it becomes a lecture series. But if it's a 5-minute, hey, science is awesome thing, that's just skimming the surface in a way that no one needs that either. So we thought, okay, you know, 20-minute chunks of time per scientist, it lets them really get into these questions, but in ways that are palatable to an evening-length experience. And to me, the TED Talk is like the perfect model of that because it's really easy to have like two or three of those in a row and not feel like, okay, I'm getting kind of exhausted.
Yeah. And,
so that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. But I'll say what the point I started to raise was that the key with all this, the whole point of it, is that we want people to have an emotional association with science. We don't want this to be an edutainment. I hate that term. Or actually, I don't hate that term. I hate most things that are described that way because they are neither. They're often not particularly educational nor entertaining. They're often weak versions of both of those things because they're just not compelling. And the idea here is to say, actually, I'm okay, in a sense, throwing the educational aspirations of this completely out the window, which probably sounds counterintuitive because everything about this show is built around real, actual hard science. There's no, you know, wild speculation just to drive headlines and that kind of thing. This is all real. You know, we won't be talking about, you know, alien crop circles or things like that. But the goal of the show is to create an emotional association with science. It is not to teach you. Now, there will be lots of information, but if you don't walk away having learned a single fact, I'm not insulted or bothered by that. What I care about is that you, when I say the word science to you, you know, afterward, a week later or whatever, or I say curiosity or discovery, you have a Pavlovian emotional reaction that comes along with it. And honestly, part of this is emboldened by working on projects like Journey, where you would say things like video game, and that word suddenly brings to mind for people, instead of competitive, you know, esports badassery, it becomes, you know, I think when I think of video games, I think of my family, or I think of true love, or I think of self-discovery. Thank you. games, obviously very grateful that Journey is kind of part of a recent lineage of games that's pushing into that. But even like, for example, my friend Ken Wong's recent game, Florence, which, Florence is the second in a succession of games that he's worked on, the first being Monument Valley. You know, these are games that explore, Florence particularly, is a game exploring like the arc of relationships and what it is to flirt, to build a life together, to break up, to move forward. Like it's a very study of life in a very contemporary and direct way. And the goal is, in the same way that if you say the word video game and it starts to have a really kind of emotional meaning for people, and it's very personal and could potentially inspire them to go learn more, or play other games, so make games or whatever. That's the goal here. If I just say the word science, after having seen the show, the hope is that someone doesn't say, yes, well, the distance from the Earth to the Sun is one astronomical unit. It's like, no, I don't actually care. If you you'll learn that on your own if you care. My goal is to help you care. And so that's kind of the underlying thing. And the number one motif through the whole show is that the three greatest words anyone has ever said are, I don't know. and to obsess over this idea that ignorance is not a pejorative. Ignorance is empowerment. Ignorance is, hey, I just discovered a gap in my knowledge, which gives me an incredibly targeted goal of how to fix that. And it's actually exciting to fix that. It's not this nuisance, and it's not this shame of, oh, crap, I can't believe I didn't know this, how mortifying and embarrassing. It's like, no, how exciting. I get to go learn something I just fundamentally did not know before. That's amazing. What possible better feeling is there than that? So that's the idea.
That's incredible. You know, in your GDC session where you and some other composers were talking about the lessons that you have learned over the years about working on projects, you said that you've come to the conclusion that your favorite projects are the projects that make you the happiest are when you're scared to death and you're really out of your comfort zone. So this must be like a perfect fit for you then.
Yeah, yes, I am so wildly out of my comfort zone on this that you can only imagine how happy I am. But that's true. I meant it. You know, to me, putting myself in a position where I've kind of backed myself into a corner and I have to kind of compose my way out of it, I mean, that is definitely my happy spot. And so, yeah, I definitely been bringing that to kind of the grandest scope here. And this whole, and I realized, you asked kind of about the origin of the project. And the funny thing is, all this started practically on a dare with the Colorado Symphony, where I was in town conducting the Banner Saga in concert like 4 years ago, the first Banner Saga. And backstage, they said, we love working together. And if we were to give you a night on our calendar to do, like in our season, to do anything you wanted with, what would you do? And I had this fantasy of kind of a science and music show, but it was whatever I said to them that day, and I honestly don't even remember what I said, it was not what I just said here now. It was some very primitive version of that idea. But whatever it was, right there on the spot, they go, okay, great, let's do it. And then it's been like literally 4 years of refining the concept, whittling it down, reaching out to and recruiting these scientists and kind of, really honing in on what their roles ought to be. And then, of course, a couple of years ago, about halfway through this overall process, I realized this is bigger in scope than I even should be trying to do on my own. And so I reached out to my friend Tony, like you kind of alluded to. He and I have been friends for basically a decade, but we never really worked together. He was working for the most of that time on this show Through the Wormhole with Morgan Freeman. He did another show with National Geographic after that called Breakthrough, and a bunch of other kinds of similar projects, and very, very immersed in the scientific community. I mean, Tony was friends with Stephen Hawking, for example.
Wow.
He's friends with multiple, Nobel laureates, including the most recent winner of the Nobel Prize in Physics, Kip Thorne, who won for his work on gravitational waves, but most famously, whose work was the basis of the movie Interstellar, and such that he was given an executive producer credit, even though he's a practicing physicist out of Caltech. And that's Tony's world. I mean, he walks equally at home in the kind of Hollywood world of filmmakers, but really in the world of the actual front lines, cutting edge scientists. And so he was that perfect blend of, I pride myself in being fairly well versed in science, and specifically in areas like physics and cosmology and some aspects of biology. But it's pedestrian. You know, I'm a fan. I never studied it formally. I've just always been interested in it. I'm always reading articles and things like that. But Tony actually studied it and has been professionally involved in it for a long time. But he's also a professional storyteller. So I said, I showed up like Uncle Sam going, I need you. And he was all too eager to just dive straight in. And here we are a couple years into that process, and we're barreling towards our premiere date and trying to raise money, and the whole thing's crazy exciting.
Yeah, it really is. Every time I get an update, it's like, oh my gosh, another fabulous thing. This is just so cool. Can you give?
Well, I'm glad. I hope it's not too spammy. We try to keep the engagement high, but not annoying.
Well, it's good to keep it on people's radar for sure. And can you give me any hints at all about the kind of music that you're planning?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the music is going to run a gamut because the emotional trajectory of the show runs the gamut. But there's no question that, if, you know, for the people that, when they think of my work, they think of things like Journey and Abzu, you know, kind of a broad sweeping, or, you know, a term that I have a mixed relationship with would be like cinematic. But when people think of my work, if they think of that, there will definitely be a strong dose of that kind of thing. I mean, we want something that feels like it's full of awe and grandeur and wonder. There's actually a kind of a prototype to this whole concept is on YouTube called Our Curiosity, which is a video that I directed in tandem with another scientist, a friend of mine named Jeff Marlowe, where we decided to make a little love letter to the Curiosity Mars rover on the 2-year anniversary of its having landed. And we hired Felicia Day, the actress, and Neil deGrasse Tyson to be our narrators. And then I wrote a score around their words. And we, you know, directed, we commissioned a bunch of animations and things like that, and made a little, you know, 7-minute or so video you can find on YouTube. And you can hear in that video a pretty good idea that it runs through several different emotions, but it's using the orchestra in a very orchestral way, meaning it's not pads, it's not, you know, static kind of droning sorts of things. I mean, it's meant to feel like, you know, kind of like a lush symphony. But it's dancing very specifically around their words, where you think of it more like an opera, where you're building around your vocal soloist. Just in this case, they're speaking, which is why I tend to say, well, if you know your terms, you could call it an oratorio. But I don't like it to sound. I don't want it to really sound like a classical event as much as I want it to sound like a theatrical event.
There are some truly, truly incredible rewards that are music themed. I mean, they're massive packages of all of your soundtracks, and they're beautiful artworks by Angela and science themed things, and then some secrets.
Yeah, we're pulling out all the stops.
Well, if you weren't one of the creators, if you were a backer, which reward would you choose?
Well, for me, the $150 Science and Art Treasure Trove is kind of the be-all, end-all. I mean, it's well over 90 albums and huge amount of proprietary science content. Custom curated, I should say. Not necessarily proprietary, because it's science is for everyone. It's all public domain, kind of by definition. But it's all stuff that we've, you know, curated with our friends at NASA and on various missions and that kind of thing.
How can people find the Kickstarter, A Light in the Void?
Yeah, all my social media is just bombarding it everywhere. A Light in the Void, LITV Concert is kind of our handle on all social media. And also we have a bit.ly, you know, bit.ly/LITV Concert. That'll take you to the Kickstarter. You can just search for A Light in the Void on Kickstarter, or search for my name, or just, or search for your name on Twitter, and inevitably a recent tweet of yours is in response to something that we posted, because you are so gracious in your interactions with us. And so that is I think probably the best way to find us.
Awesome. Well, Austin, thank you so much. I'm just really looking forward to this, and thanks so much for taking some time to talk about it.
I'm sorry I can't stay longer, but I'm really, really grateful that you gave me a chance to talk about it.